thanks a lot for being here tonight. This is a very nice event with people on here who are, first of all, friends of mine, which is what I live for, my friends, and enormously talented writers. I don't know how many of you know everybody. I know you all know me, of course, but I don't know how many of you know all of these panelists, but they are a diverse group of writers and of enormous talent. To my left is Bradford Morrow, who is kind of new to the mystery world. He's been writing for many years, many, many years, and is a major figure in the world of literary fiction. He founded a magazine, one of the great literary magazines in America, called Conjunctions, which he has edited for many, many years. He has written, he doesn't always admit this, but he's written volumes of poetry. He's written children's books and seven literary novels. And I don't mean literary in this case in a bad way. It's frequently a curse word in my home, but Brad's are exceptional. And he has a new book coming out in the spring called The Diviner's Tale, which is a combination of literary, supernatural, and mystery. And it's brilliant, and I'm the publisher, so I particularly love it. Next to me on my right, your left, is Lorenzo Carcaterra. Lorenzo is a New York Times best-selling writer, in fact, number one New York Times best-selling writer, and the author of some really terrific, exciting, fun books to read. Sleepers became an enormous success for a very, very long time, and also became a very successful film. Lorenzo has written, what, about eight books now, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I know this stuff.
Very good.
And the most recent of which is Midnight Angels, which has spent some time on the list and is really a remarkable book. Lorenzo does not use a series character in his fiction, and you become involved in each of his books as you start to read them in a way that you will be it's hopeless for you to try to put it down once you've begun. Next to Lorenzo is Thomas H. Cook. Tom is more prolific than the other writers on this panel, also older. Tom has written 22 books now, if memory serves. He has been nominated for Edgar Awards, Edgar Allan Poe Awards, seven times. Tom is one of those very, very rare mystery writers who claims that he's not a mystery writer. He's a novelist, and that is true. He is truly a novelist, and there is always a mystery, a crime, or a very high level of suspense in every one of his books. And I kid around with Tom a lot. Tom was best man at my wedding a few years ago, and we're best friends. I will say, and I hate saying it in front of him, he is one of the most talented writers I've ever read, an absolute poet. And if you're not familiar with his work, I implore you to try him. And just be in a good mood, because his books are so dark and depressing that if you're in a bad mood, you'll want to kill yourself. Lindsay Fay, down at the end, is a new friend, because she is not a longtime writer. As you can see, she couldn't possibly be. She has had a career as a performer, an actor, singer, dancer, whatever. And she said, look, if it goes bad up there, I can start singing and dancing and you know, to bail us out. Lindsay's first, I made that part up. Lindsay's first book is a Sherlock Holmes, a story in which Sherlock Holmes meets Jack the Ripper. Titled Dust and Shadow, And she wrote a short story. Brad, Lorenzo, and Tom are all in Best American Noir of the Century. Lindsay's short story made into the Best American Mystery Stories of the Year, which is a pretty remarkable achievement because there were between 3,000 and 4,000 mystery stories published last year, and 20 go into this book. So it's quite a tribute to Lindsay's ability. So listen, it's hard to know because this is such a wide range of things to talk about that I want to talk about something general first, if I may. All of the writers here are essentially novelists, but they are being honored by Best of the Century, Best of the Year, for writing short stories. What do you find to be the major difference between writing a novel and a short story, apart from the fact that it's shorter? Bradford, you want to take that first?
Wow, that's really such an easy question to ask and a really hard question to answer.
Yeah, that's why I asked you to answer
it
first.
Beyond the length issue, the arc of a short story is meant to be compact. It's meant to have an exposition that occurs like a really quickly blooming flower, whereas a novel, I feel, is like a whole, it's a whole forest opening up and the mountains, and it's just a larger project. A short story, well, you invited me to write a short story, and I had never really written that many short stories before. Because every time I started writing a short story, I started thinking, like, well, where will that fit into the book? Where will that narrative fit into the larger novel that I'm working on? And Otto had invited me at a reception at a bookstore to contribute to an anthology he was working on. And it really focused my mind on how do you actually accomplish that? How do I write something outside of the book I'm working on at any given moment? And I came up with an idea. My short stories are rather long. They're 30, 35 pages. That's not necessarily a typical short story. But what you need to achieve in a short story has to take place in a single breath. The reader sits down, you're with the reader, you're thinking about the reader. It's not a marathon like when you're reading a novel where it goes on for days, perhaps, and days as a reader. So you think a little bit about the reader, what the reader's has available, and what the reader wants, and it's a fairly fast movement from crisis to epiphany, or from crisis to tragedy. To me, the narrative arc is necessarily shorter. So,
crisis to epiphany, I like that.
Or sometimes epiphany to crisis.
you see why he's a literary writer. He uses big words, epiphany. Lorenzo, is that the way you would look at it as well?
Yeah, I think the short story is there's a containment. Like, I try to contain everything, but at the same time, you have to say so much. You have to tell a whole story. And secondly, the money's greatly different between short stories and novels. Just wanted to throw that out there, Otto.
Lorenzo also writes screenplays, doctors' screenplays, writes television, was producer and writer for Law and Order. I didn't go into all of that, but it came to mind when you talked about money.
Yeah, yeah. But I do think it's the containment. You have this story with however many characters. I think in mine there are 8 characters. But I just and you do so much with them. But you'd also I don't leave the room with them. I was kind of I gave myself a little test not to leave the room, but at the same time try to tell you as much as possible about their lives, which led to the taking it all the way to the conclusion. So it was kind of, it's like a puzzle for me, and it's kind of fun to do. And I'm grateful that he does ask and does pay.
Not as well as movies and novels.
Yeah, well, we've established that. But
Tom, what's your experience writing short stories?
Well, you certainly have less time to develop character, but it reminds me a bit of when I write a short story, I get in a somewhat different mindset, the way I try to get into a different mindset when I go to the theater, because if you're a novelist and you go to the theater, it can sometimes be a very unpleasant experience because you're watching character unfold so quickly. And so you have to change the way you're thinking about the way a story operates in order to enjoy it sometimes, because things are going so quickly. It's done in such broad strokes that if you're used to thinking of stories as unfolding more slowly, it can become very annoying and look very very broad to you. A short story is just the opposite. There, I think the real test is to minimize the parameters of the tale without reducing the impact of the tale at the end. And the reverse is also true, because I think the best novels really are the ones that work like short stories and have that kind of circularity that a short story has, where it's like a good meal. You get the entree and you get the hors d'oeuvre, the entree and the dessert, and it's all rolled into 30 or 40 pages, whereas in a novel it has to be the best of novels can accomplish that, but it's just simply a longer and obviously a longer process.
When you set out to create a character arc for Sherlock Holmes pastiche, the massive advantage that you have is that within three sentences, people tend to know who the major players are, if you're writing it from the point of view of John Watson, etc. But on the other hand, you're at a tremendous disadvantage because you are then being compared to one of the greatest mystery short story writers of all time immediately. That actually, I don't know why I ever agreed to it. That takes tremendous hubris. So the set of difficulties is different, certainly, for me when I was writing The Case of Colonel Warburton's Madness than it was when I was writing Dust and Shadow. I often tell people when I was writing my Sherlock Holmes Jack the Ripper novel that I was 60,000 words into writing it before I knew who Jack the Ripper was. And that was okay in the sense of writing a thriller at the time, because my protagonist didn't know either. And then I could backtrack and draft and make it all work together. But if you are 60,000 words into a short story and don't know where you're going, you have a pretty serious editorial problem on your hands. So I essentially wrote The Case of Colonel Warburton's Madness, because it's an armchair detective mystery, backwards. I created the crime, solved it, and then wrote it almost in reverse. So it was exactly the opposite process as writing the novel.
you have all written suspense novels, and to some degree, Diviner's Tale, Bradford's book, is also is a suspense novel, but there is a detective, a person who works as a detective. You don't have to be an official member of a police force to be a detective in mystery fiction, as we all know. And Lorenzo largely writes suspense stories without real detection most of the time. And the same is true of Tom, although Tom has written a series of private eye. He was a private eye or a cop? He was a private eye, right? Yeah. I understand how you can move from one to the other in the novel form, because you've got time to do that. But can you do that easily? Is it easier, is it more palatable for you to write detective short stories and as opposed to creating a tale of suspense? Lorenzo, can you?
Well, I've only done one where I used two cops from one of my novels in a short story. And that was a lot of fun. I just took an episode from there when they were much younger to establish and how they first met and how they kind of came to work on a case that they had not been able to solve, and that kind of unified the partnership. So that was fun. I think it would be hard for me to it would be difficult to create a new detective in a short story. I've never done it. It would be kind of interesting to try to do. I would like to try to do it. Yeah, I've never done that, so that might be something else we can talk about. But that would be hard for me. It would be difficult because I usually, when I come up with a cop, he's somebody who, you know, takes on a big case and not something I can contain in a short story, I don't think.
Tom, have you ever done a real detective short story, and could you if you haven't?
I don't know. I'd have to sit down and think about what it was I was what it would be, of course, but no, I haven't ever written a short story that was a crime story in that sense, a detective story or something like
finding
that.
Finding clues and hunting down clues and things like
no,
that.
No, I've never done that.
It'd be pretty hard to do, I guess. Did you find it hard to do the short story relative to the novel? I mean, apart from, again, length and complexity of the novel.
Well, yeah, I think it's tremendously difficult. I mean, it's almost a... I like the way Thoreau put it, where he said it takes a very long time to make a story short. I find that once you have a central, like, kernel of an idea, maybe that kernel works, but for you to present it in a way that has an emotional arc at the same time that it has a logical arc at the same time that it has some sort of stylistic arc, for you to trim that down to what is more or less a microcosm of a novel, of a complete story without all the extra scenes and possibly points of view and possibly, you know, other elements that authors put into it. Yeah, it's extremely difficult. They say that once you've thrown up your hands and given up poetry because it's too hard, you try short stories. So I certainly found it very difficult, yeah.
Brad, you haven't really done that. The short story that is in this book is so horribly dark. It's so dark. But it's not a detective story at all.
No, even the novel you're referring to, The Diviner's Tale is coming out, there's a sheriff in there, but he really follows behind the detection that's being done by a non-official person.
Right.
And anything that whenever I've ever ventured into, you know, the realm of detection or crime or mystery or thriller or whatever, or, you know, gothic, all of my so-called detectives are just ordinary people who have an ability to maybe see around the corner better than most. For me to name a detective and create a background for the detective, and it's just nothing I've ever done. It's just nothing I've ever actually needed for my work. So really, the detection that occurs in my books that are not even mystery novels or suspense novels, the detection is always done by somebody here in the audience or somebody even up here, not police figures or trained authorities who would be looking for things that have gone wrong.
No, they count. Amateur detectives count in the mystery field. There are lots of them. Miss Marple is an amateur detective. She has no official standing.
Yeah, but I think just for me personally, yeah. I don't even think my amateur detectives would consider themselves detecting anything. They're following something they don't even know necessarily that they're onto. Certainly in The Diviner's Tale, the woman who's our protagonist, she doesn't necessarily know she's onto something.
Tom, would you rather read short stories or novels when you read fiction?
Well, it entirely depends on the novel or the short story. There are a lot of...
really?
But, yeah. I was talking to Brad not long ago. He mentioned Willa Cather, and I was really surprised that I mentioned one particular short story that I hadn't read since I was probably when I was in college. And I was just amazed at how much I remembered of it. And I don't mean just sort of the general plot. I remembered I remembered the final line. And I remember things like that about those short stories. And I'm not sure I would do that quite as much with a novel. The short stories as a reading experience are very, very compact. And so you get away from you come away from the experience with the impact very soon. And I think there's a solid quality to that experience, where the experience of a novel is just sort of, can go on at a languid pace and keep you going for a long time. But there's something about a short story that's a real bullet to the heart in a way that I think relatively few novels can achieve.
How about you, Lindsay?
Well, I think that as a massive fan of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, I'm sort of spiritually obliged to to laud short stories. But I think it's very difficult to write a novel that retains that sort of emotional immediacy and the imagery after when you've sat down and you've read a short story that's really effective and really fantastic and just visceral and it grabs you, when you walk away from that experience, it's it's like a meal. It's an entire dish that you've enjoyed. And with a novel, you're experiencing that over a period of days, if you love it, or a period of weeks, if you don't love it quite so much, or maybe over a period of months, if you are trying to make yourself finish it. So I think that just maybe temporally speaking, it's a much more immediate experience to enjoy a short story than a novel.
Bradford is
This is a really interesting question. I remember reading a William T. Volman story in manuscript before he was ever published in this country, before he had come out. And now he's quite well known. But I remember reading, it was a very long story, a 60-page story, 50-page story. And I just kept, when I was reading, I thought, I was rooting for him. You don't necessarily do that in a novel. I just thought, don't drop the ball. Keep it going. This is unbelievable. This is great. And then the last sentence, yes. It was a perfection I like the bullet to the heart. It's a bullet to the soul. The same thing when I was reading Robert Olin Butler's collection of short stories, the one, the Pulitzer Prize, A Good Scent from a Strange Mountain. I kept going, and he's a friend of mine, but I never felt, and I don't feel jealous of writers, but that was one occasion where I thought, he's got to drop one of the balls in this collection here. These are perfect stories. One after the other, different voices each time, in Port Arthur, Texas, and down there in the Gulf, and just different characters, and one perfection after another. So you have that kind of feeling when you're reading a story that it's coming together, and you're at the right moment, and the story is done properly, and just everything is timed. It's just a wonderful experience. A novel is a world, it's a larger, grander, and the feeling I have when I finish reading a novel that I truly love, it's a totally different feeling. It's like I've lived a life that I could not have lived if I hadn't have read that. When you read a short story that's great, I've had an insight into a life. So that's sort of the difference for me.
So smart.
Thank you, Otto.
Lorenzo, can you be as smart as that?
No. I'm not going to lie, no. But I do have a soft spot in my heart for short stories because I remember the first time I actually, as a kid, got lost in a short story. It was a Sherlock Holmes story. And then when I was at the depths of about to quit the Daily News as a copy boy, as you know how much that job actually sucks. And I was actually going to quit the next day, and that night I was supposed to drive this older woman home, which was part of the Daily News job that actually sucks, and in a snowstorm. And she turned out to be John O'Hara's sister, and she told me she had mentioned that he was a copy boy at the news and gave me a collection of his short stories. So not that I'm John O'Hara, but I figure, all right, if he could handle it, I can be a copy boy too for another month anyway. Well, you weren't a copy boy.
Right? I was.
You were, that's right, yeah.
We were copy boys at the Daily News, not at the same time, but that's where we started our professional careers, what we laughingly call our professional careers.
Well, at that point, it wasn't even a career. It was just piss boy. Yeah. Get me coffee.
Boy, copy. Get me coffee. Yeah.
Even the girls were called boy.
Yeah. There weren't any girls when I started.
Wow.
I'm going to exclude Lindsay from the next question, not because I don't have any affection for you, but as Pulitzer Prize nominee. But the other three people are in the noir book. Now, I have known Tom for 30 years. I've known Lorenzo almost that long, and I've known Brad for less time. But we spend a lot of time together. These are among the funniest, nicest, happiest people I know.
Oh, no.
How do you write such dark stuff? Cook?
It's just chromosomal, I think. I remember I was at a science fair with my wife years and years and years ago when my daughter was only about four, and she's 30 now. And they remember those mood rings that they used to have back in the late 70s and everything. They had a little fair there at the school, and they were selling mood rings. And I was in a perfectly happy mood. I was with my wife. I was with my daughter. I was having an awfully good time. I'll buy a mood ring, And so I put one that was sky blue. It was just sky blue. And I put it on my ring, and it just sucked to black. Sucked to black. And I thought, that's what happens when I get to a typewriter. That's exactly what happens. Everything, not about my own life, which has been a very fortunate life, but it's sort of about the way of things and sort of the way I view human life and experience it in a sense out there rather than within me. That's simply where it goes. It just does not go anywhere else ever.
Lorenzo?
I like to write happy stories. I really do, but before I know it, somebody's got a knife, somebody's got a gun. And I think, you know what, I'm not to go into therapy about it, but I think you can lay the rest of the blame on my mom. My mom was lived here for 35 years, never spoke English, only Italian in the house and everywhere. And her idea of a bedtime story was, this was the bedtime story, I'd be eight, or it was the same story all the time. She'd come in Italian, sit down, and say, because she felt compelled to tell me a bedtime, I didn't really want one. But it was, a guy is in Italy, goes into a church that's empty, has to rest, and instead of seeking forgiveness for his sins, he just rests. So he doesn't seek forgiveness for his sins, and that's his big mistake. The floor of the church opens. The souls have come up from hell. They suck this guy down. They seal the floor, and we never see him again. And it's good night, Lorenzo. So I think, and she thought that was a good thing. I shorten it. I keep out the devil and the flames and all that other crap she would amplify the story with. But and then not leave the light on, which was also because we didn't have a lot of money. So we can blame it on Mom.
Brad?
Well, yeah, I'll blame it on my mom. Blame it on Otto. why do I like to read and write really dark work?
And I ask it because you're not a dark person. You're a relatively happy person.
I'm happy when I'm having lunch with you.
Oh, yeah.
or 3-hour lunches. This is great. I was visiting William Burroughs when he was still alive in Lawrence, Kansas, in his 1927 Sears and Roebuck house. And I was staying in the guest room. And Burroughs, was a very dark writer. But he was a cat fancier, and the TV set was on all day long on some nature channel, and he had cat fancy magazines, and he had 12 cats himself that would come in and out of the basement, and he was just a pretty sweet guy. But I remember I slept very uncomfortably in his guest bedroom because on the walls were whips, guns, instruments of torture. It was basically his guest bedroom was his like storage room for guns and handguns and shotguns and you name it. And that morning we got up. William never slept, by the way. He just kept talking all night long. I got up in the morning and I said, William, why? You're a pretty happy guy from what I can tell. You love your animals and you're good natured and all this kind of stuff. And so why do you have all these guns and torture things and all this stuff in your guest bedroom? And his answer was, Otto, he said, Brad, never ask why.
That's
the answer.
That's dark, man. That's dark.
Yeah, I've never forgotten that one.
On the subject of dark, I'm going to ask the panel one more question, and then we'll open it up and hope that you have some questions. In my introduction to the noir book, I define noir in a way that I have never read somebody else defining it before, and I separate noir fiction from private eye fiction. Mostly when people say to you, what's your favorite noir book or noir film, you might say, The Maltese Falcon, or The Big Sleep, or Chinatown. And I say, I posit that private eye fiction is not at all noir. Noir is about losers, about people who live pessimistic, hopeless, cynical lives, and who are morally flawed. And it's their own lack of morality, their own lack of center, that causes their ultimate doom. and they don't have to die to be doomed. Whereas in a Private Eye novel, Raymond Chandler likened the Private Eye to a knight, to somebody who rose above the mean streets and who would do anything to solve the crime, to take care of his client and to make sure that justice was done. And when justice is done, in my world, that's a happy ending, not a noir ending. Lindsay, do you agree with that definition?
I think that's a really good definition, actually, artistically speaking. Because you leave some spiritual leeway by calling the private detective a knight. If the private detective is a knight, that doesn't necessarily mean he's a knight who plays by the rules or a knight who follows all of the codes of honor he's meant to. He could be a bully of a knight. He could be an absolute bastard of a knight, and he could still end up successful at the end of the book. So yes, I think that, I identify certain stylistic elements of hard-boiled detective, particularly when they're made into films. Sometimes you identify them very easily with noir. But in the fictional world, that sense of isolation and disillusionment is unlikely to occur in a private detective who, after all, is working ostensibly on the side of order and the restoration of order. So, yeah, I think that's a cool definition.
Cool. Brad, what do you think about that?
I think it's way cool. I think it's just a wonderful definition, and I had not thought of noir that way. You know, I had always thought of, before I read your wonderful intro, I'd really thought of noir as a kind of a, I don't know, a subset of the Gothic, you know, where the great dichotomies are in play, good versus evil, illness versus health, bad behavior versus good behavior, and all that, the old classic this versus that. The loser paradigm, though, is to me, I hadn't thought of it when I wrote that story for you, and when I started writing, because of your invitation, a whole lot of other stories. And now when I'm sitting here thinking about it, insofar as I can remember my stories, they're all losers. And the loser is not necessarily a knight. And I love the double entendre with night and darkness and all that. That's really great. But it's a terrific definition. I think it expands the whole meaning. And all the noir fiction that I know of actually does seem to have that as an element. And we all kind of feel for losers, even killer losers, even losers that are really, truly bad eggs. At least I do. I they interest me.
I don't feel.
Well, I'm drawn to the broken wing, I guess. I don't know.
It's very sweet. Lorenzo, what do you think?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it until you wrote the intro. But in a movie sense, I was thinking about how it would apply to movies. Like a movie like White Heat would be a noir, by your definition.
Well, sure, right? It is.
Yeah. So, yeah, Cody Jarrett is as noir as you
Top
get.
Top of the
right?
world,
yeah.
Ma.
And and the grifters. I mean, so immediately when I saw that the new I had not seen that definition before. And so, as usual, Otto is a trailblazer.
you didn't see it before because I made it up.
But yeah, no, I think it fits. I kind of like it, and I like the night aspect of Private Eyes, because I do see them as, the Sam Spade, the Marlowe guys, and the Op, and all of that. And I enjoy those stories a lot. And I thought of them as noir as a kid, and up until probably I read your intro
yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom, do you have another view?
Well, maybe just to add something, and that is the. It seemed from what you were writing that that noir didn't require any character to have a moral center at all, whereas the detective is the moral center of the book. You actually you see the action through his moral prism. And when I was thinking about that, I was thinking about Double Indemnity, and obviously those characters don't have a moral center, but the insurance agent does. So is that noir, or does he become a detective in that story?
No, in Double Indemnity there is a detective, but the primary protagonists die.
Gotcha.
And
that makes it noir for me.
Okay. Yeah.
And they could have had decent lives if they weren't greedy and flawed, morally flawed. Well, that's enough happy talk about noir and death. Do you all have any questions? Who has a question? The question is the first literary noir Paul Kane's Fast One. It is certainly a noir novel, but it's far from the first. There's a story in Best American Noir called Spurs, which was then made into the movie Freaks, which is a very famous noir film by Todd Browning, that's from 1920. But I kind of held noir of the century. It's really not the century. I totally lied in the title. It's really from 1920 to 2007, sort of the last 100 years or so. But Edgar Allan Poe was noir. That's dark stuff, you know. So no, Paul Kane is a novel that not too many people know, but it is certainly a noir novel. There are all kinds of noir fiction. We're talking about. I'm defining it as crime fiction, but obviously horror novels frequently are noir, and there are stories that are not, but by Poe, that are not at all horror fiction, that are very dark, like The Cask of Amontillado, or The Pit and the Pendulum. So Poe is the noir master of the 19th century, and Cornell Woolrich, in my world, is the noir master of the 20th century. The question is about Patricia Highsmith, where in fact the loser wins. In the Ripley books, for example, the most famous example, there is a Highsmith story in here because she is a consistently noir writer. Everything is dark. When I say that the protagonist of a noir story is doomed, I think Ripley is doomed. He may live, and he may get what he thinks he wants, but he has no life, no life that any of us would trade our own for. And I think he is about as ultimate a loser as there is in fiction, a brilliantly conceived character. If you don't know these books, Ripley is an totally amoral character. He's not even human. Because he cares nothing about anyone else, society, the world, other individuals. He cares only about him and what he can have. And he'll murder people or steal from people without losing a minute's sleep because he doesn't have an ounce of humanity. And I think a person without an ounce of humanity is a loser. The Sweet Smell of Success is a movie with Burt Lancaster and Tony Curtis. And yes, it is definitely a noir. It's a noir story. It's a noir film. When we were talking about noir, we were trying to hold it to literature rather than film, which is where the word first came into use, really, by the French, naturally. And in film, a lot of what makes a film noir is style. Mm-hmm. It's cinematography, it's color or lack of color, it's sort of German expressionistic stuff, which is that's about style rather than substance.
How cool would it be to update some of those Poe stories with like Venetian blinds, chiaroscuro shadows and stuff?
I'm sure somebody will. You know, neon lights going on, blinking on and off outside.
It'd be fantastic.
Yeah. I think it's one of the first things I said in my introduction is that it's like art, pornography, and love. It's hard to define, but you know it when you encounter it. Dark is very similar to noir. I mean, dark has a broader definition. You can have a private eye novel that's dark, you know, where there's a lot of violence and a lot of people get hurt. And serial killer books are dark. They're frequently noir. But they're almost always dark because people are getting killed. It's seldom a good thing. I'm not sure that there's a wide difference between dark and noir except for extremity.
I'm just like art, pornography, and sex. I got to tell you, Otto, if I were single, man, I'd be using your lines all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, that's a good line. At a dinner when it's a little awkward. And
no, right. I didn't say sex. So you heard that. I said art, pornography, and love.
Well, that's the second date.
Or as Harlan Ellison said, love ain't nothing but sex misspelled. Does anybody else want to...
Noir versus dark, just linguistically, if you're going to look at it only linguistically, noir is French for what, black? Black. So you have black, and then you have less than black. So black, I suppose, would be the utter disillusionment and the the completely isolated protagonist and no hope of ultimate reconstitution. And then you have dark, which would be... Yeah, there are shades of maybe the loser wins. So I think maybe just if you look at it on the color scale, there's a difference there.
Shades of gray. You know what else? I think Otto's right. The whole German expressionism, the whole film noir, the 40s and 50s, that term came into... When I hear the word dark, I mean, Hamlet is pretty damn dark. It's a dark play, but it's not noir. I mean, Hamlet's in a way a loser, I suppose. I don't know whether... but. I don't see that as a noir. They're reading the Iliad. There are some very dark moments in the Iliad. I mean, there's dark. Dark is just very sort of a big kind of term, I think.
The book of Genesis.
Yeah, read the Bible. That's a dark book. It's a dark book. But maybe not noir. I think noir is actually a fairly recent term.
Of course, now we're talking science instead of saying that dark is as dark as you can get, the total absence of light, and we're comparing it to a black hole.
Frankly, now I want to know whether Hamlet's noir or not, because really only Horatio lives at the end of that.
Well, let's not even mention King Lear, right?
Right.
I just did, actually.
There's Shakespeare noir out there.
Okay, time for one more. Kara. The question is, we talked a little bit about how can such nice, happy, friendly, loving people write about noir fiction, but this question is, How can you do it, and how do you feel when you get out of it?
Well, getting out of it is great. You feel really happy about it. When you're in it, it's not like you walk around with a cape and you're hunched over. But you do get into this sort of mood, where you sort of... I think the darkest book for me I did was Apaches. I mean, that pretty much was as close to the edge as I want to get of dark. And while I was in the middle of that, I just really was not, I was fun to be around, I guess, at times, but most of the time I just went off, they leave me alone. My kids are grown, so they don't bother me. And they might ask for money, but that you can mail them that. The dogs don't seem to care, so... in all seriousness, you just kind of you keep it inside. You're thinking about it a lot, and while you're in it, you sort of. I mean, I don't know if it's the right word. You sort of in. It's. I find comfort in that place because I come from dark people. I mean, they always look at my family always looked at the bad side of things. They never looked at. And my mother used to say, "Never leave the house. Only bad things will happen." So, she'd watch the news, and if there's an odd news story of two people went on vacation and one was killed, my mother goes, see, you go on vacation, look what happens. She survived the war. She lost a lot of family in World War II, and my father was an ex-convict. So there was like this whole mesh of people at dinner, all of whom either had been in jail or died. Somebody they knew died in the war. So you grow up with that shit around you, and then they play opera on top of it. You don't walk out of there with a lot of laughs. It's not the Marx Brothers home. So either you write this stuff or you end up, eating a gun, I guess. I don't know what we do otherwise. You become a comic is what I've been told. Yeah.
I think for me, writing dark is really like having a really intense conversation with yourself, as opposed to having cocktail conversation with yourself. And that's what I really like about it, because I'm talking to that other person, that other me, who's not a father or a wife or any of that sort of thing, has none of the sort of the adornments of life, but just that sort of that pure person that you're having a very intense conversation with while you're writing Dark. The thing that disturbs me most, because I can't sell books writing Dark, is because people have a tendency to think of Dark as depressing, and I don't see it that way at all. I mean, to me, a Dark novel is a novel that's a moving novel. And it's amazing how often you hear people say something like, well, did you like that book? And they'll say, no, I thought about it for days. Wait, isn't that a good thing? I know when I was growing up, when a book hit me that way, and I lingered in it and was in its atmosphere for days after I read it, that was actually the definition of a good book. But I think, increasingly, that's probably not what readers really prefer, or a lot of readers prefer.
So if you saw a fawn run over by a truck and thought about it for days, you would think this is a good experience?
It would depend upon what it made me think about. I wouldn't dwell on the fawn. I would dwell on the meaning of the fawn.
You've just finished a book, Lindsay. Is it Dark?
Absolutely, yeah. It's darker. It's darker than Dust and Shadow. And I agree 100%. I think that Dark can be moving, and that Shades of Grey can be very moving. I used to want to write things sort of abstractly, and I would sit down, and I had been told by numerous people, well, you should write what you know. You should write from your own experience. So it always ended up being these sort of tales of a Pacific Northwest teenager who was into grunge and wasn't really going anywhere, and there's no conflict there, there's nothing of interest, there's no dramatic value, you're not going to write Catcher in the Rye over again. And I stopped ever wanting to write what I know. I would prefer to write what I want to read, which is something that I know nothing about, which is to discover a story and to discover new people and to discover new settings. And that's why I write historical fiction as well, because I would rather explore an atmosphere that I've never been in before and really flesh it out like crazy than I would write about growing up in a small town in Southwest Washington in the mid-90s, which is not particularly interesting compared to the Jack the Ripper murders or compared to what I'm working on now, which is the beginning of the NYPD. The dramatic story arc for me is not what do I know, but accessing that darkness is what do I want to read and what is interesting to me and emotionally relevant to me when I read material. That's what I would like to accomplish when I write it.
Bradford?
I agree with everything I've heard here. One other thing I might add is that just for me personally, and this may define me as a loser, essentially noir figure myself, but when I'm writing, I can be writing about something very, 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 very black, or I can be writing about something quite wonderful. And personally for me, the writing experience is the same. I don't feel different if I'm writing a scene where there's essentially some evil taking place than I do writing a scene where there's a lot of good going on. I just don't feel the difference personally while I'm in the writing mode. It's just the truth. I don't know, maybe I better think about that or talk with a therapist, but I don't find any essential difference if I'm writing well, doing either of those things, then I'm feeling really good. I feel okay. And when I leave that writing mode, whether it's about something noir or something other, I feel if I've done okay at the desk that day, then I feel good. I feel fine. So I don't know. That's a very complicated question.
It is. Our time is up. I know that all of the panelists join me in thanking you for coming, and we will collectively express our willingness to sign as many books as you would like to buy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.